Collectively is a podcast series focused on exploring personal responses to the town of Eastbourne's art collection. This series approaches the nearly 100-year-old collection through a queer lens, feeling, tuning into, and selecting works that evoke memories, emotions, and experiences of queerness. My name is Renee Bourne Sutherland, and I'm an artist working with film and video, with a particular focus on bodies being carriers of narratives within landscapes, and the body itself being a site for transformation. Tanner invited me to connect with people from the LGBTQIA+ community living in East Sussex. After a number of sessions in the art store discussing artworks I had selected, each contributor was invited to choose works they would like to ponder and explore further. You can hear more from me, learn about the Towner and its collection in more detail, and how we sifted through 5,000-plus artworks in the first instalment in this series. But in this episode, I discuss with Emily The Three Graces, 1911 by Fallon Gibb, and Portrait of Constant Lambert, 1927 by Christopher Wood.
I'm Emily. I am from Eastbourne. I grew up here, so Towner has always been kind of a presence in my childhood and through my kind of youth. So I was really excited to get into the collection. I have recently studied art history and museum curating, so I'm also really interested in interrogating narratives of the different interpretations that people can bring to the table. So working in these groups was really interesting for me. I was really excited about it.
You chose a piece from the collection, one of my favourite pieces, absolutely. And it's the first piece I showed in the first session that we were in. It's titled The Three Graces. It was painted in 1911 by Fallon Gibb. Can you describe the painting visually so those that are listening can get a sense of what it looks like?
I will give it my best shot. It's a very kind of dreamlike, almost ethereal kind of piece. It depicts three figures. They are in a kind of intimate setting. It's a very tight, focused kind of work. In the foreground, you have on a kind of bed surface, or what appears to be a bed surface, you have a darker figure on their knees, with behind them a second figure with their arms wrapped around them in a very kind of intimate embrace. The figure in the foreground has a kind of kiss, like a puckered mouth on the cheek of the second figure. And then you also have present to the right of them, slightly further back, another figure who is facing away from the front of the image, but is kind of turned around in a dynamic sort of movement, looking towards them. Their faces are very relaxed. It has a very kind of relaxed feel to the image. The colour scheme is very kind of, I feel, very earthy. A lot of browns, oranges, kind of earthy greens. And then in the very background, it's kind of almost a bizarre wallpaper pattern, but it's almost like nonsensical. It looks like symbols and hieroglyphs. We can spend so long looking at this image trying to decipher what this background means, potentially. But it's really difficult, I think, to describe this image because it just has so many kind of uncanny, I think, elements to it. The colours and the surfaces and even the minute details of the shapes of their faces, and they have these kind of very androgynous features. I feel like they represent people, but also are kind of removed from. I mean, you wouldn't ever see a person that looks like that, but they kind of, it's almost like they're an amalgamation of symbols that are supposed to represent people.
One thing that you just said that has never occurred to me, and I can't remember if we talked about it in the session. So the figure in the foreground, who's kind of on their knees, sitting on their shins as such, or their calves, sorry, sitting on their calves and being held by the other figure. When you said that they were puckering for a kiss, like giving a kiss to the cheek of this other person standing behind them who's holding them, I'd never seen that because I really thought they were further forward.
I mean, it's a very flat painting. We've talked about they look like kind of hieroglyphs or like wall paintings, but when you look at their faces, it's like just something else about the composition of this image that doesn't quite align, and it makes it kind of an uncanny image.
And also the way that that figure is holding that body in the foreground. It's so, for me, intimate and nurturing, but it also feels very awkward. You know, the way the hands are placed and twisted, and there's kind of that dialogue or that conversation between intimacy and gesture. I don't know, it's quite confusing. But yeah, I hadn't seen that pucker. I don't think I'm ever going to not see that now.
I didn't notice it immediately either, because the way that it's a kind of a flat side-on image. It looks, as at a first glance, it could be just their mouth from the side, but I think there's a pucker there.
I showed it in the first session, and we looked at it again in the third session. We came back to it, and like I said, it's one of my favourite images as well. So have you learned anything about this painting since selecting it?
I think this artist, from the pieces that are in the collection, shows a transition from this kind of open approach to sexuality that it kind of seems to be exuding, and then a regression, possibly a regression into like more almost like sexless paintings that don't really have the same kind of flair to them. Yeah, the display of this work was kind of a disaster for Felengib because it was confiscated by the authorities in Ireland at the time as being, I guess, I mean, I can understand why it would have been confiscated at that time. It has such a sexuality to it, but also such a queerness that is so evident in their bodies and their orientation and the fact that there's three of them. It has this real sense of like polyamory to it, I feel, or kind of unconventional sexuality and intimacy. From, I mean, looking at the pieces in the collection, you kind of get the sense that after, if this is the earliest one, then he never really recovered from such a kind of public reprimand for what he was trying to express. And then his paintings become a lot more subdued and sexless, like I said. To me, like, that's one of the things that makes this painting so fascinating, because I think all of the elements of this painting, as kind of the way that it's composed, so it has a kind of timelessness to it. Like, they could be from any time. They're so kind of alien. They look as if they're maybe ancient Egyptian, like painted onto a wall, or futuristic even, like with their hair or their, like, the color of their skin, their faces, just everything about them is so weird and timeless. I think what it is that really draws me to this painting is that it speaks of like the timelessness of queerness and how queer people have existed in kind of unconventional, intimate spaces together forever through all of human history, and that it's such like an integral part of the human experience to experience queerness. And I feel like that's, to me, that's what he's trying to express in this painting. And for them, it's almost like a tragically comic that then it would be publicly reprimanded and he would be just like slapped down, and then the response to it spoke volumes about how those attitudes changed through the course of history.
You think about it, this painting is like 100 years old, right?
Yeah.
So, well, over 100 years old. I was immediately drawn to it, like, for the queerness that just, it's oozing out. Mm-hmm. This sense of queerness in terms of the subjects, queerness in terms of the painting, the way it's painted, the way that their bodies are compositioned, the androgyny. Like you said, it's futuristic, but it also feels very ancient. There's all these things rolled into it. But we don't know Felengib's sexuality. Like, that hasn't been documented anywhere. We're not sure if he was queer or not, but there's definitely a queerness in this work. Even the skin tones of the body, you know, of the bodies, I should say, they're so different. It was his first, I think, big seminal show in Ireland, and his mother is Irish and his father was English, and he had very much aligned himself with being connected to Ireland and the Irish community. And so I guess in some way it was like, maybe, and again, I'm trying to get into his mindset, but it was like a homecoming for him. Like, he was going back, he was taking these works that were being acknowledged by his peers, and he has this one person show in Ireland, and then the police confiscate all the work. And I think not only did they shut the show, they confiscated the work for many years. I think Karen or Sarah from the collections teams were saying that I think it was in storage for 10 years before he could get it back. I mean, that's heartbreaking to, you know, it's like your creativity is locked down, silenced, locked away, hidden away.
Mm.
And, you know, you talked about his later work, which is, there's some of it in the collection as well. And for me, it's heartbreaking because I look at it and it just feels empty. Like, it feels for me soulless, which is a really harsh thing to say. But in comparison to looking at this image of the three graces and how powerful and how timeless that quality is. And I loved that connection that you made with the timelessness of intimacy and queer intimacy that's been there throughout the ages, because I guess that kind of goes along with what his show and the work, regardless of whether he was queer or not, and it being having to be contained, locked down, put away, out of sight, restricted.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I really loved as well about having the opportunity to be in the Towner collection and really get deep in there, looking at different artists, different pieces, and kind of piecing together all of these queer stories, or even people with kind of queer, not queer sensibilities, but like just queer ideas, queer ways of expressing things within the collection, which is so kind of locally focused. It was like being able to witness this community that has always existed in this kind of part of the country that I was not aware of. I didn't know there were, you know, queer communities all over Sussex that have thrived for, there's not centuries of work in this collection, but over the last century or so, like it was just so warming to be in almost like a queer archive of people and their life stories being expressed through their work. Yeah, it was great because it's not something that you really see. Like queer history is not something that is well documented or is considered important in like a mainstream kind of way.
Which I think is really interesting because like when I was invited in and got to go through the collection and part of the collection, because it's, you know, over 5,000 works, and I definitely didn't look at 5,000 works. You know, there was like huge racks being pulled out and looking and emotionally trying to connect with artwork and looking for those historical queer elders, those that came before me, those and how they were trying to communicate their piece of time, where they're kind of allotted and where they were and how they expressed that. And then what remains, because if they weren't acknowledged at the time, there's only these tiny fragments. And I'm so interested in that scanning and that kind of intuitive feeling and looking for those things. And it's interesting you said that, like going into the collection and feeling that and looking at all these queer ways of seeing or being, because it is a very different way to read the Towner collection, I think, compared to the way other people have done it.
I think it's interesting you should mention kind of having an intuition for it, because it was amazing looking at these works and feeling, not being able to pinpoint why, but feeling a queerness in these works and then kind of pulling it apart further. And I think there is a substantial connection that you feel with kind of, I love the phrase, like your queer elders. And it was really wonderful to partake in that. Talking about queerness, queer feelings, specifically to this painting, what I think one of the things, the main things I loved about it as well, is that it's so sexual, or I feel that it's, there is an explicit sexual intimacy to it. I feel that today, like when, as queerness becomes kind of more widely accepted and widely represented and explored, it's represented in a way that's very kind of sanitized and almost desexualized in order to make it palatable and friendly and, I guess, marketable. And I think one of the things that I miss or regret about that is that I think for me and for a lot of queer people, like, sexuality and sex is so important to queerness, and I feel that is often missing from conversations about or representations of queerness. And so to see this very like intimate, very gentle, sexy painting, that was really striking to me. What I've written in my notes is, it's a sexy painting, which is that's my point.
What I love about that is that it's beautifully intimate. And I think I talked about when I first looked at it, I was looking at it and I was like, it's called the Three Graces. So, you know, there's various connotations of what the Three Graces are throughout history. But two of the characters have the same color hair. And it took me a while. I was thinking, is it the same person, but at different times? And I find it very sexualized, but it is intimate. There's a real sense of connection and love between these three.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we've got, again, the person in the foreground sitting on their calves, one of the redheads is holding that person very intimately. And then the third person who is facing the wall but looking back, they're still part of this connection. It's just in that moment, they're not physically connected to the other two. They don't feel excluded. They feel completely included. And I think what I love about it is that the three of them are one. And I think that is sexy. Mm. There isn't a sense of someone's missing out or someone's being jilted or there's an argument happening. There is an absolute sense of harmony, actually, in the picture.
Yeah, I think it speaks of like the queer experience of like the exploration of and like breaking down boundaries of what is considered like conventional sexuality or sexual experiences. And I loved seeing that in a work. It feels like a safe space
Totally agree. Totally feels like a safe space. And it also feels like safe looking at it. I don't feel like I'm being voyeuristic. The subjects are androgynous looking, but they do have very odd shaped breasts. They're almost like small tennis balls that have been stuck on to the chest, which makes them weirdly more androgynous for me. It doesn't feminize them in a way. It actually neutralizes the body, which I really like as well. We're not gazing at these androgynous bodies or female bodies. We're kind of part of what's happening. And that is sexy. It's that inclusiveness that you talked about.
Yeah, like the breasts, the kind of very explicit nod towards like, these are androgynous figures, the hair, their faces. This one on the right has a very square jaw, but then also an incredibly curvaceous figure. And I just think that seems so deliberate to me, which is why I feel he probably was a queer man, because that's the kind of interrogation that you make when you're a queer person. Mm. And you kind of want to push those boundaries and push those conventions in depicting people, I guess.
So you mentioned the wallpaper, as we've been calling it, but it's actually the backdrop to where these figures are seated on. And they are weird symbols and there's no logic to them. They kind of are kind of around the body and to the edges of the body or the wall, and then there's spaces. But also there's this, what I'm assuming is a bedspread or a sofa that they're kind of sitting on or leaning against. I'm wondering how this piece is connected to maybe your interrogation as an art historian student and themes that you're interested in. And I also know you paint. So is it connected to that in any way? Like, is there a kind of personal connection in a more kind of theoretical, practical way in terms of how you practice your creativity?
I think it would be a stretch to call myself a painter or an artist. I mean, I have been painting portraits of people that I love recently. So I really enjoy this kind of the intimacy that is like radiating out of this painting. As an art historian, this kind of explicit sexual feeling in a painting, this kind of queerness, is not something that I've seen from kind of the early 1900s. And it speaks to my lack of knowledge, maybe. But also I think it speaks to the lack of representation of queer histories in art museums, in institutional spaces. And that's something that we're seeing a lot more of now in art museums, the effort to present queer stories, the reinterpretation of collections to represent queerness. But there's been no shift, I feel, in the collections themselves. I would love to see this on display in like a specifically queer context. And I'm sure there are so many more pieces like this one that are hidden away in collections that should be seen and they should be interpreted. And I think they provide such a window into the queer experience that should be shared with everyone. I think that really speaks to the challenge of like reinterpreting collections that is really kind of such a hot topic of conversation right now in museum and gallery circles. I would like to see more of it.
Yeah, and I think it needs to happen actually on an industrial scale, because I feel like those narratives are there and they get chipped away at as well. So it's like history is being tweaked and adjusted to become, and I do this in air quotes, palatable for the time. But as a result, that history then becomes the narrative. And actually, the further we go, the less we get away from potentially these original stories and narratives. Like, I really would love to know more about Phelim Gibb, and I will do more research. But the fact that I did a Google and a bit of a deep dive, you also did that, and we don't really have anything on his personal life. It's kind of fascinating, right? Especially when we look at this image and we both of us are so entranced by it, moved by it, want to know more.
And I feel like we have very similar ideas too about what his headspace and what he was like as a person in order to produce this work, but that's all speculation.
I think it's going back to what we were talking about before, is like that intuition, that feeling that you get about queerness in terms of sexuality, gender, the way you create work. For me, it's taken time to trust that, to feel that. And then that needs to be tapped into and then presented and researched, etc.
Something about being in the storeroom at the beginning of that process of like finding the queerness was really magical.
I really love talking about that work and talking in that kind of queer sense, like this is why it feels queer to me, and then someone else will say, well, this is why it feels queer to me, and having that conversation, then surfacing more things. And I just found that absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, the kind of the vastness of queer experiences.
So you also were drawn to another piece.
I was, yes.
That I also equally love. And it was by Christopher Wood. And it's called Portrait of Constance Lambert. And it was painted in 1927. So I'm wondering if you can visually describe this painting to us.
I love this piece so much. I think it's so funny. Difficult to describe because it's, again, another kind of dreamlike queer space within the frame. This subject, Constance Lambert, he's not nude, is he?
Well, I'd say he's got a pair of boxer shorts on.
He's wearing what may as well be like a Speedo. He's looking incredibly muscular, incredibly sexualized. He's reclined in a way, like almost as if he could be on like a chaise longue. He's holding a violin under his arm, kind of fondling the neck of the violin, and it's curved upwards in like a very obvious kind of phallic way. And then in his other hand, he has a pen and he's in the throes of producing his art, essentially. And I love this piece. It's very dark and stormy. He has that kind of moody, artistic atmosphere. And in the background, there's a bust, by the looks of things, a very dark, it's kind of spooky almost, but I guess it must be symbolically significant in some way. We kind of felt that this piece was like a partner piece to the portrait of Constance Lambert that is in the National Portrait Gallery by Christopher Wood, which is completely the opposite. It's a very kind of straight-laced, formal portrait. It's so, I don't even have the words to describe how much affection I feel for Christopher Wood having like painted this very straight-laced, formal portrait of this man and then also had this fantasy of him. In the context of being in partnership with the other piece, you can really get the sense of the friendship they must have had, almost the teasing and the jokes and the affection that they must have had for each other, even as friends. I'm laughing just looking at it, like it's so funny. I like to imagine that they had the kind of friendship where Christopher Wood, in like the classic queer experience, had a crush on his straight friend, produced this piece as like a joke of like, this is how I see you.
I think for context, it would be good to talk about the fact that they actually were friends.
Okay, yeah.
And Christopher Wood, artist, Constance Lambert, composer and author. Christopher Wood, a few years prior to this painting, I believe, had done some backdrops for a production that Constance Lambert was working on for Romeo and Juliet, I believe, but they were never used. And then he did the portrait that you're referring to in the National Gallery, which, again, I find hysterical in contrast to this piece, because that piece, he's seated on a chair, he's fully clothed in a suit. It is very somber and very serious. And then in contrast to this piece that's in the Towner collection, which is definitely queer erotica. I mean, Constance Lambert here physically didn't look like this in real life. He is busting out of the frame. His body can be barely contained by the edges of it. You know, like he's so muscular. And the ridiculousness of the violin neck curving in a way that would make the violin absolutely useless. And then the pen is almost like the creativity is ejaculating out of him as he scrolls across this notebook that's in his like lap. It's just the whole thing is, like you said, it's hysterical. And Constance Lambert, as far as we're aware, was a straight man. He had been married twice to women. But there was definitely a friendship there. And I think there is something, again, about, one, this fantasy of the way I would like to see you. But maybe Constance Lambert liked to be seen like that, you know, like that straightness that actually isn't afraid of sexuality and queerness.
Yes.
And actually becomes part of the narrative of the friendship.
I think, yeah, it speaks volumes about like him as a person that he maybe would enjoy this kind of attention, or I get the sense even that it's like it's not sincere, it's like a tongue-in-cheek representation of like, this is my gay fantasy of you.
But also, you know, in comparison to the photos I have seen of Constance Lambert, I mean, I'd be quite happy with this rendition of myself in comparison. He really does look like quite buff.
Yeah, he's like a Greek god, Greek god of music.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Would you say there's a connection between the two pieces? So the Phelim Gebb Three Graces and this piece, Constance Lambert by Christopher Wood.
All queer art is kind of connected in that it kind of, beneath the surface, there is a very readable queerness to it. There is a queer experience that can be extracted from it, even if it's just speculation or, you know, me imposing my own feelings onto it. And like, when you read a piece in that way, it also gives you an opportunity to kind of interrogate your own queerness as someone who's interacting with these experiences and interacting with these forms of expression that are so undeniably queer in some cases. And I think that's why queer art history is so interesting, because it's just undeniable.
Do you have a preference, or, you know, if you had to choose one, which one would it be?
Do you know, I'm not sure, actually. I mean, I love Three Graces. I think it's a beautiful image. But in terms of the kind of affection and humour of the Christopher Wood piece, I just think there's so much of him in that, and so much of their friendship in that piece that I love it. I'd love both of them in my home. That's what I'm saying. Maybe not next to each other.
In three words, how would you sum up the Three Graces?
I don't know if I can. Intimate. But I think that really kind of encapsulates the intimacy of the figures, but also the intimacy that you feel as a viewer. You're not, like, as you said, you're not objectifying them. It's not voyeuristic. You're very much a part of their relationship, the experience that they are having. I think, given our conversation, I'd like to say also timeless, for the kind of the timelessness of queerness that I pull from this, or the timelessness of the queer experience and how queerness has always been present and is kind of an inherent part of the human experience, I guess. I cannot for the life of me think of a third thing to say.
Two's fine. I think if you can sum up something that you've got a deep connection with in two words, that's pretty good. So timeless and intimate.
Timeless and intimate, yes.
And what about our friend busting out of the frame?
Oh, I love him so much.
Constant Lambert.
It's so erotic, I suppose. It reminds me of, like, you know, you flip open like a gay porn mag. That's something that you'd see.
That is so true, actually. It is quite contemporary in terms of the pose as well. The way he's, like you said, he's kind of propped up on a chaise longue.
Yeah.
He's kind of, you know, on his elbow. His legs are up as well. Everything's centered in the center.
I'm trying to think of, like, one word that encapsulates, like, the humour and the affection that is in this image, the kind of symbolism of it.
You were talking about that. I actually thought the word for those three things for me is kind of gentle. There's a gentleness to it. Like, there's the affection, there's the humour, there's something. You don't look at it and think gentle, but actually when you know the narrative.
There's definitely a gentleness to their friendship that comes through, just in the sense that Christopher Wood, as a gay man at this time, is able to nudge, this is you, to his friend. Like, that's really funny. Something that I love in any artwork is something that is from a different time but speaks to such modern sensibilities. And it kind of reminds you that, like, people have always been the same. People have always had a kind of silly sense of humour, and people have always had, like, these really affectionate, silly friendships with each other. People don't change, and I think that's really lovely to pull out of an image like this.
Yeah, to feel connected, that notion of being connected and belonging, regardless of kind of where you're from or the way you feel or the way you think, that a connection to another.
Yeah, I have a lot of affection for this one. I think maybe more so than, like, this is my favourite. The Give is probably my favourite of the two, but I have, I think, of an affection for the Christopher Wood.
It's been so lovely catching up, and I loved the sessions. I think it was so great when we were going through. You were so, like, interested and chatty, and I was, like, always energised by things that you were kind of bringing a thinking about.
I agree. It was wonderful to have those sessions in the collection. Everyone that came was so engaged and had such different perspectives and ideas, and that's just the best thing. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening. You can find out more about the Towner and the collection on their website, with selected artworks also available on Art UK's online database. You can find links in the episode notes. Collectively will be released fortnightly from November until early spring 2022. Subscribe to where you get your podcasts to stay up to date with new content drops and any additional bonus audio. And do sign up to Towner Eastbourne's newsletter via their website And on socials, follow at Towner Gallery. And spread the queer love. Do rate and review collectively, as it really helps other people find it.